Due to the graphic nature of these crimes, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes discussions of sexual abuse of minors that some people may find offensive. We advise extreme caution for children under the age of 13. Gloria Trevi's hand trembled as she opened her battered notebook. She knew she only had one chance to impress record producer Sergio Andrade. She had to give it everything she had. The studio fell silent as Gloria took a deep breath. Then she began to sing. The sound was intoxicating. When she was finished, all Sergio could do was sit in stunned silence. He could hardly believe Gloria was only 18 years old. She was passionate and polished, yet still full of potential. He asked to see Gloria's notebook and tried to keep his face even as he flipped through the pages. Her lyrics were catchy and refreshingly original. It seemed he had struck gold. But of course, he couldn't let her know that. It would take away his leverage. He needed to make her think he was doing her a favor. She had to think she needed him, that he was her only chance at stardom. With a sly smile, he offered to help Gloria. He only had one condition. She would need to listen to everything he said. He was the boss. His judgment couldn't be questioned. Gloria Trevi agreed to do whatever it took to be a star. She had no idea she had just made a deal with the devil. Hi, I'm Lainey Hobbs, and this is Crimes of Passion, a Spotify original from Parcast. In the legal definition, a crime of passion is a violent crime that occurs in the throes of extreme emotion, leaving no time to reflect on the consequences. But in this show, we explore how passionate relationships sometimes lead us to criminal activity. How does a husband and wife become killer and victim, or killer and co-conspirator? If there's a thin line between love and hate, what manipulates our relationships into deadly results? You can find episodes of Crimes of Passion and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, we're discussing the exploitative relationship between record producer Sergio Andrade and pop superstar Gloria Trevi. We'll explore Sergio's disturbing fixation on adolescent girls and how he used Gloria to groom aspiring young singers as her star rose. Next week, we'll talk about Sergio and Gloria's downfall and the international effort to bring them to justice. We have all that and more coming up. Stay with us.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest-running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
Gloria Trevi always knew she was destined for stardom. At just 3 years old, she started rehearsing at her mother's dance studio, eager to take the stage and entertain. In the rare moments she wasn't practicing her moves, young Gloria spent her time scribbling down song ideas. She spent countless hours imagining herself singing her heart out in front of crowds of adoring fans. Though she had high hopes for her future, Gloria's home life was far from glamorous. Her father, Manuel, was strict and controlling. He was especially harsh with her mother, verbally and physically abusing her when she didn't do what he wanted. He went so far as to lock his wife outside for hours if she missed his self-imposed 8 p.m. curfew by just a few minutes. As a child, Gloria could do nothing but watch as her mother endured years of torment. Around 1980, when she was 10 years old, her mother had enough. She walked out on Manuel for good, taking Gloria and her three brothers with her. Life wasn't easy for a newly single mother of four, but no matter how bad things became, she refused to go back to her tyrannical husband. Her determination inspired Gloria, who saw firsthand the effort it took just to put food on the table. The hardships forged the girl's relentless spirit. She vowed that when she grew up, she would do anything to succeed. Luckily, by the time Gloria started middle school, the family's fortunes had turned. Her mother fell in love with a kind doctor, and he became a loving and supportive stepfather. For the first time in her life, Gloria saw what a happy marriage looked like. Still, adolescence was not easy. While her mother was less demanding than her father had been, she still had certain expectations. Being a professional dancer, Gloria's mother was thin, radiant, and always in excellent shape. She wanted nothing less from her 12-year-old daughter. But having gone to bed hungry so many times over the last few years, Gloria was just relieved to have food in the kitchen. As she went through puberty, Gloria had to endure the ridicule of adolescent boys, in addition to harsh comments about her weight from her mother. She developed a number of body issues, working overtime to be everything to everybody, all at once. Before I continue with Gloria's psychology, please note, I am not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist, but I have done a lot of research for the show. According to a 2016 study on childhood obesity, researchers found that young children, especially girls, experience lowered self-esteem and devalued self-worth when they have negative perceptions of their bodies. The pressure to be thin can lead to feelings of social stigmatization, rejection, and unhealthy weight control behaviors. The constant stress pushed Gloria to transform herself. She lost weight, started wearing makeup, and bought more stylish clothes. By the time she turned 13, her life's mission was to look absolutely flawless at all times. Gloria's mother was impressed and encouraged her hyper-self-conscious behavior. She proudly boasted that her daughter was pretty enough to be on television. Though Gloria liked the attention, her makeover hadn't really come from a desire for self-improvement. Instead, she became a people-pleaser, constantly terrified of disappointing those around her. Nevertheless, the transformation pleased her mother, who was so confident in her daughter's star quality that she entered Gloria into a nationwide casting contest for a famous soap opera. If she won, Gloria would be granted a year-long scholarship to a prestigious talent training program, and perhaps the start of a long career in show business. It was everything Gloria wanted. Thousands of girls applied from all over the country. She beat them all. At age 15, she packed her things and moved to Mexico City. Over 600 miles from home, she was suddenly alone in one of the biggest metropolises in the world. She had no idea just how hard things were going to get. Unfortunately, Gloria's scholarship did not go as she'd hoped. After a year of training at one of Mexico's premier talent schools, She had nothing more than a handful of forgettable walk-on roles to show for it. When her contract was finished, she found herself on the streets with no job or prospects. While she wandered the city brainstorming her next move, Gloria ran into her friend and fellow up-and-coming singer, Ricky Luis. By a twist of fate, Ricky had just signed a record deal with a producer who was holding auditions for an all-girl music group. When he heard about Gloria's struggles, he offered to introduce her. Gloria was over the moon. Just when she thought things couldn't get any better, Ricky told her that his producer was none other than Sergio Andrade. Sergio was a wildly successful music executive, known for his uncanny knack for discovering and curating talent, especially young female artists. He had produced several hit songs for artists such as Gabi, Cristal, and Lucero, each of whom were teenagers when they first recorded with him. As the creator of some of Mexico's biggest hits in the 1980s, Sergio was known in the business as Mr. Midas. It seemed that everything he touched turned to gold. To the public, he was a sensation, but behind closed doors, he hid a lot of baggage. As a child, Sergio Andrade could never live up to his parents' near impossible expectations. He was constantly dogged by the shadow of his older brother, Eduardo. When he failed to measure up, he was brutally disciplined with physical abuse and humiliation. He was even forced to thank his father after he suffered repeated beatings. Unfortunately, his mother was just as cruel and unquestionably reverent to her husband. Learning from their example, Sergio developed a dysfunctional idea of love based on fear and power. The philosophy drove Sergio to push himself as far as he could go, even when it wasn't healthy, to get the approval he craved. He developed into a bright, driven young man with a passion for music and philosophy. He had dreams of becoming a concert pianist, but needing money to fund his aspirations, he took a job writing pop songs for RCA Records. As it turned out, he was a natural. Within a few years, the industry took notice and he was hired as an artistic director by CBS Records. Barely in his mid-20s, he was one of the youngest music executives in the company's history. Yet Sergio still couldn't impress his parents. While he was a successful record producer, his brother Eduardo became a celebrated sports broadcaster and remained the clear favorite. Family gatherings inevitably descended into streams of praise for the elder Andrade son, while Sergio sat quietly to the side. In times like those, Sergio retreated to his piano and sulked. The music studio was the one place in the world he didn't feel completely pathetic. For his entire life, he'd felt like second best. No matter what he accomplished, it was never appreciated. He ran his fingers across the keys and tried to express himself, but the notes all came out wrong. He needed someone next to him, cheering him on. More than anything, he wanted respect. As a music director, Sergio demanded absolute power in the recording studio. No matter how famous the artist was, he told them exactly how to perform his songs. While some singers had a hard time accepting his authority, Sergio found that there was one particular demographic he had no problem controlling: adolescent girls. Impressionable and eager to please, inexperienced young women who recorded with Sergio were always the most cooperative. To him, there was a seemingly endless pool of talent. If one girl didn't work out, they were quickly replaced. Sergio Andrade was far from the only male industry executive to exploit this unbalanced power dynamic. But over the next few years, he perfected a cycle of abuse unlike anything the business had ever seen. By 1980, 25-year-old Sedhil rarely worked with singers who weren't young women. His reputation as a producer was well known, and because he held their careers in the palm of his hand, artists had no choice but to feed his ego. They did and said whatever it took to get on his good side. As a man whose idea of love was based entirely on obedience, Sedhil soon developed a predatory lust for vulnerable girls. When 15-year-old Gloria Trevi auditioned in front of Sedhil a few years later, he had already dated no less than three of his former singers while also managing their careers. Each relationship followed a similar pattern. First, Sedhil used his position of power to assert his authority. Next, he made a show of confessing his feelings, often claiming the girls were the inspirations for his love songs. Once the starlets were either guilted or brainwashed into believing they felt the same way, he swore them to secrecy. He insisted no one else would understand their love. Thanks to his undeniable track record of hit songs, no one questioned Sedhil's insistence on working with young women. When Gloria Trevi walked into his offices with her friend Ricky, she wasn't surprised to see dozens of hopeful girls were lined up to meet him as well. The two of them arrived at the studio a little after 4 p.m. Gloria soon realized she was practically the only one who had showed up without an instrument. But she wasn't about to let that stop her. No one was willing to work harder than she was. It didn't matter how many qualified musicians there were. She was going to beat them all. Hours passed as Gloria sat patiently in the waiting room. One by one, artists poured in and out of the large office doors. The gateway to her dreams was right in front of her eyes, and it seemed to grow more mystical with each passing minute. It was nearly 2 a.m. when Gloria was waved inside. With a smile as wide as her flowing hair, she introduced herself and started singing. It was an inspiring performance that left Sedhil at a rare loss for words. He wasn't quite sure what to make of Gloria. She couldn't play an instrument, but she had the looks and an undeniable energy he couldn't take his eyes off of. After years in the business, he knew attitude was more important than talent. To test her dedication, he asked Gloria if she could learn the piano in the next 2 months. Without hesitation, she promised she would do whatever it took. Sedhil's lips curled into a smile. He'd found his next star. Coming up, Sedhil Andrade starts controlling Gloria Trevi's life.
The CIA. They're the first line of defense for the United States, analyzing intelligence to thwart any possible threats and keep us safe. Some of their involvements are made public, and others aren't. Hi, it's Carter from Parcast, and in honor of America's birthday, we're uncovering the cases you were never supposed to know about in the new series, Conspiracy Theories CIA Edition. From international assassination plots and mind control experiments to catastrophic cover-ups and secret societies fit for film, sift through the agency's most questioned and controversial affairs. Each week, Conspiracy Theories CIA Edition exposes the covert operations intended to protect us from conflicts, but end up creating conspiracies. Where does the truth lie? Where do the lies end? And how much do we really want to know? Follow the new Spotify original from Parcast, Conspiracy Theories CIA Edition. Listen every Thursday, free and only on Spotify.
Now, back to the story. In the mid-1980s, 30-year-old Sedhil Andrade hired 15-year-old Gloria Trevi to join his new all-girl rock group, Boquitas Pintadas. She soon found out that working for the famed producer wasn't all it was cracked up to be. Along with Gloria, four other girls were recruited, several without prior musical experience. Sergio had a vision of excellence that required absolute perfection. He'd already produced a number of young stars in his career, but he wanted to prove he could literally find talent off the street and make them famous. Doing so would feed his ego and confirm that he was the best producer in Mexico. To get them trained to his high standards, Sergio worked the girls to the bone. Their schedule bordered on torturous, with them often pulling 18-hour days with hardly a break for food. Over the next few months, they were trained in everything from music theory to harmony and composition. They essentially crammed in a master's degree worth of education in just a semester. For a handful of 15-year-olds, it was exhausting. It didn't help that their mistakes were often met with scorn and intimidation. Sergio was hypercritical and demanding. The challenging environment took its toll, and the group was soon plagued by drama and infighting. Bickering and finger-pointing led to resentment. No one outside of the studio saw the dysfunction, but by the time they were ready for their first performance, the group was already on the verge of collapse. But the most shocking development of all was kept secret from nearly everyone. At some point during the year, Sergio started manipulating 15-year-old Maria Portillo, the group's bassist, into a relationship. The two even got married without any of the other girls knowing. While Sergio had dated his clients in the past, this was the first time he had actually gone through with a wedding. Though Maria wanted to share their love publicly, he convinced her to remain silent by implying it was in the best interest of the band. She believed him, not realizing he was simply protecting his carefully crafted image. Sergio then leveraged her affection by coercing Maria into becoming his loyal spy. She shared details and private conversations she had with the other girls. Unable to take his name after they got married, she honored his artistic vision instead by renaming herself Mary Buquitas. While Mary never spilled their secret, Sergio started to hear whispers in the industry that he was involved with one of his singers. A 30-year-old man, constantly surrounded by teenage girls, was sure to turn heads. And by mid-1986, a number of salacious rumors surfaced. Not all were about his current protégés. The most serious allegation was that Sergio had impregnated one of his former stars, and that her father was looking for revenge. His reputation sank further when the story was run in a prominent television magazine, which gave merit to the accusations. The gossip sounded outrageous, but Sergio couldn't deny it. Instead, he went into hiding. He shut down his studio and gave away his entire client list. Gloria and the four other Buquitas were cut too. After all their hard work, the group was disbanded, collateral damage to Sergio's retreat from public life. For the second time in the span of a year, Gloria was back on the streets. After being let go from Buquitas Pintadas, the next chapter of Gloria's life became one of the most mythologized aspects of her iconic backstory. For the next few years, there is almost no trace of her existence. According to her, from mid-1986 to late 1988, she lived in Mexico City, briefly taught an aerobics class, and lived with a mysterious older man named Alejandro for an undefined amount of time. The details she gave years later about this time are incredibly vague, often changing from interview to interview. Whatever her circumstances may have been, they did serve as valuable inspiration for her songwriting. She filled an entire notebook with lyrics and ideas, waiting patiently for her moment to show them to the world. When she finally reconnected with her former manager in 1988, she was ready to get to work. Around that time, rumors about Sethiel's misconduct had died down enough for him to crawl out of hiding. His comeback started with him taking charge of a late-night radio show. It was a humble gig for a man who had recently been one of Mexico's most in-demand record producers. But his options were thin. Producing was far from his mind, and when 18-year-old Gloria showed up at his radio station one evening, he was surprised. Brimming with infectious enthusiasm, Gloria begged for a chance to showcase her new songs. Sergio listened patiently. She was a far cry from the nervous, bombastic novice he'd worked with years before. Now, Gloria Trevi was polished and commanding. Her songs were catchy and infectious. It was a light bulb moment for Sergio. He could see a star being born right in front of his eyes. Though Gloria's talent was undeniable, Sergio knew they still had a lot of work to do. The industry was oversaturated with singer-songwriters, and if Gloria wanted to make it, she would have to stand out from the pack. Her image needed to be fierce and attention-grabbing, and as always, she would have to listen to exactly what Sergio said if she wanted to succeed. With the same heartwarming smile she had given him almost 3 years earlier, Gloria told him she would go to the ends of the earth to be a star. From that moment forward, Sergio took full control of her life. He told her what to wear, what to eat, and most importantly, how to act on stage. Every decision went through him. But when it was time to produce Gloria's first record, Sergio claimed that he didn't have the funds to pay for studio time. Though he owned multiple homes and had just bought a new car, he lied about having no money to invest. If Gloria was serious about being a singer, he told her she'd have to find the money herself. Unfortunately, Gloria had been working overtime just for Sergio's approval. She was penniless and had to beg her mother to finance the recording. 1 week, and nearly an entire savings account later, she had her first demo tape. Still, it would take some time for Sergio to land a record deal. Until then, Gloria was left broke. She was too embarrassed to ask her mother for anything more, and when she approached Sergio about a possible advance on her sales, he waved her off. If she wanted money, she'd have to work for it. So, while he was out looking for distributors, Gloria became his personal errand girl. By day, Gloria did Sergio's chores around the radio station. At night, he let her sleep on the office couch. His rules were as strict as ever. Just as he had done so many times before, Sergio groomed the younger singer to become dependent on him. Any tiny mistake or perceived lack of respect was met with rage, insults, and shame. Before long, Gloria's self-worth hung entirely on his approval. He used every trick he knew in order to seize control of her life. In a 2018 article on emotional manipulation, therapist Tamara Hill explored the various ways abusers assert power over their victims. Common methods include micromanaging day-to-day life, setting harsh expectations or rules, and guilt trips. Eventually, the victim is stripped of their self-esteem and their free will is gradually eroded. Even though Gloria had all the talent and had funded her record on her own, Sergio convinced her that she needed him to succeed. In reality, his future completely relied on her. By 1989, Sergio's comeback had paid off big. The 34-year-old opened a talent school for young girls wanting to break into show business and managed Gloria's up-and-coming career in his off time. All the rumors of his sexual abuse had quietly gone away, and the public once again knew him as a prestigious mentor to Mexico's future stars. nobody knew that he had secretly taken a hold of Gloria's entire life. But controlling Gloria wasn't enough for him. At the same time, he reconnected with her former bandmate, Mary Buquitas, who he'd married 4 years prior. It's unclear exactly when, but Sergio and Mary had separated sometime after he closed down his studio. When he returned to public life, he gave her a job at his new talent school. Over time, he slowly brought her back into his sphere of influence, just as he had done with Gloria. Though Sergio made it clear to Mary that they were no longer a couple, they weren't technically divorced either. He may have moved on, but Mary had yet to sort out her feelings. She was just 18 years old, and Sergio was the only man she had ever loved. Sergio used this to his advantage, stringing her along whenever he pleased. He never fully committed himself, but never broke her heart either. Instead, he exploited her feelings for his own gain. Meanwhile, he made romantic advances toward Gloria as well. Like so many other young girls he had groomed, Gloria was manipulated into believing Sergio was a romantic and artistic genius. Regardless of how harshly he treated her in the studio, she forgave him time and time again. Like Mary, Sergio neither rejected her nor fully reciprocated her feelings. Soon, he was sleeping with them both. Sergio made sure Gloria and Mary understood there were no strings attached to their sex, not for him at least. He was allowed to do whatever he wanted, but got extremely jealous whenever the two of them so much as spoke to another man. He made them live at the office, but kept them secluded from the other employees, especially the men. As far as Sergio was concerned, they were his property. And soon, he was no longer satisfied with having just two girls at his disposal. He wanted someone new, someone younger. He wanted a harem. Sergio stood motionless in the back of the crowded studio as his students rehearsed their lessons. His eyes crept slowly from one girl to the next, judging their every move. Some had potential, but most were destined to fail. Either way, he loved being along for the ride. As he lingered over his young pupils, he felt a rush of power. They were all desperate for his approval. They practically begged for his love. Lucky for them, he was happy to give it. He just needed to find one who would keep it all quiet. Around mid-1989, Sergio reportedly ordered Gloria and Mary to start recruiting young women into his inner circle. Though he already had a school full of girls to choose from, none had exactly what he was looking for. Posing as talent scouts, Gloria and Mary started hunting for Sergio's next victim. From the outside, it looked like he was simply building his client list. Only the loyal few knew the truth. Sergio didn't just want to profit off young performers. He was after their bodies. Thanks to the success of Gloria's debut album, he had all the leverage he could ask for. Gloria's unapologetic lyrics resonated deeply with Mexico's youth, promoting feminism and empowerment. To her fans, she was a passionate advocate for women who would never sacrifice her freedom for anyone. The idea that she had zero control over her own life seemed impossible. That was exactly what Sergio wanted the public to believe. The more famous Gloria became, the more he exploited her influence. At every step of the way, Gloria allegedly kept an eye open for girls she could send to Sergio. One afternoon, she spotted a crowd gathering outside the radio station. Teen heartthrob Pablito Ruiz was scheduled to make an appearance, and his fans were aching for his autograph. Gloria approached the sea of adolescent girls and struck up a conversation with a particularly charismatic young woman named Aline. She told the girl that she worked for a studio and was looking for new talent. Aline confessed that she'd always wanted to be a performer. Feigning interest, Gloria asked how old she was. The girl nervously replied that she was 13, worried she might be too young for the talent program. With a brilliant smile, Gloria assured her she was absolutely perfect. Up next, Sergio and Gloria groom and abuse their new victim. Now, back to the story. In the fall of 1989, 33-year-old music producer Sergio Andrade revived his career thanks to the breakout success of 19-year-old singer Gloria Trevi. While she maintained a veneer of freedom and individuality, in private, Sergio professionally and sexually exploited Gloria. As Sergio's loyal accomplice, she was eventually tasked with recruiting new girls into his predatory inner circle. 13-year-old Aline Hernandez became her first mark. Neither Aline nor her mother, Josie, knew what to expect when they arrived at Sergio's studio the first time. There was supposed to be an audition of some sort, but the details were vague. As they waited for the meeting, Aline frantically rehearsed the song she'd prepared in her head. After a few minutes, Gloria met them in the lobby, excited to introduce Aline to Sergio. Her mother, however, would have to stay behind. Aline felt her nerves swell. She'd hoped her mother would be in the room with her when she performed, but Gloria insisted otherwise. Sergio didn't want any distractions, she said, and needed to see Aline alone. Josie hesitantly agreed, not wanting to ruin the opportunity for her daughter. She wished Aline good luck and watched as the girl ascended a long staircase and disappeared. In the studio, Sergio tested Aline on her acting, singing, and dancing while he and Gloria watched in silence. They didn't give so much as a smile to encourage the young girl, and Aline assumed she was doing awful. When her performance ended, she was escorted into another room. Aline was a bundle of nerves. Just when she thought things couldn't get worse, Gloria returned to explain the second part of her audition. According to Aline, Gloria claimed that Sergio needed to see what parts of Aline's body would need special attention. The 13-year-old would have to take her clothes off in front of him. Aline froze. There was no way she was going to get naked in front of a strange man. Gloria assured she had nothing to worry about, but Aline stood her ground. As a compromise, she timidly agreed to change into a leotard instead. Shortly afterward, she returned to Sergio's office. She had never felt so vulnerable in her life. Sergio studied her for a few minutes, then dismissed her to get dressed. While she stumbled over her clothes, Gloria bounced into the changing room to share the good news. Aline was accepted. There was just one condition. To prevent any misunderstandings, she couldn't tell her mother about taking off her clothes. Sensing her discomfort, Gloria reportedly ratcheted up her manipulation. She said that while nudity was totally normal for artists, parents didn't understand. Like a big sister confiding in her younger sibling, Gloria asked Aline to keep their secret. If she refused, then she couldn't be trusted to be Sergio's client. Not wanting to disappoint her new friend, Aline swore to stay quiet. Once they'd established the code of silence, Gloria and Sergio took the next steps to control the girl. In a 2019 article about the tactics of child predators, educator Kimberly King explained how abusers use secret keeping to groom their victims. Once a child has shown a willingness to comply, the predator gradually escalates their sexual advances. They then demand the abuse be hidden as well, using the victim's guilt and shame to ensure their silence. Aline had no idea she was being lied to at every turn. Throughout her tenure at the studio, she came to rely on Gloria as a trusted confidant. She was still uncertain of Sergio, especially because of his temper, and saw Gloria as a mentor. Whenever she felt alone or overwhelmed, she turned to her role model for support. Little did she know, all of their conversations were immediately shared with Sergio. Though Gloria willingly steered Aline towards her predator, it's unclear how complicit she truly was in the abuse. It's possible Sergio had brainwashed her into believing his actions were harmless. Or perhaps she simply kept her guilt hidden, accepting his behavior as the price of fame. Either way, there was no denying the significant role she played in Aline's abuse. As the weeks passed, Sergio slowly took advantage of the teenager's insecurities. With Gloria's help, he positioned himself as a sensitive, nurturing genius, eager to develop Aline into his next big star. But in order to achieve her potential, he needed to be sure she was totally committed to him. When asked how she could prove herself, Gloria allegedly told Aline she should finally allow Sergio to see her naked. Assured that this was a perfectly normal procedure in show business, Aline agreed. Minutes later, she was on full display for Sergio's leering gaze. From then on, he started to favor her over his other clients, including Gloria. He met privately with her nearly every day, claiming to be curious about her life and aspirations. Flattered by the attention, Aline slowly let her guard down. At the same time, he had Gloria use her position as Aline's friend to normalize his affection. Gloria told Aline that Sergio had once been in love with a woman near her age, but that the girl had betrayed his trust and left him broken. She said he hadn't felt the same way about any woman since then. She made the story sound mature and romantic. With Gloria's coaxing, Aline started to see Sergio in an entirely new light. The more attention he gave her, the more confused she became. Barely 13 years old, she hadn't even kissed a boy. Gloria insisted that Aline think about her feelings carefully. She told Aline she was a lucky girl to have won Sergio's favor. With that, Gloria had the teen completely under Sergio's spell. Now that she was at her most vulnerable, it was time for him to strike. Pen in hand, Sergio spent hours at the piano, thinking hard about the exact words he wanted to write. The song was a critical moment in his plan, and it had to be perfect. Aline had to believe he truly cared for her, but he couldn't be too forward and risk spooking her. On the other hand, if he was too subtle, it might go over her head. It needed to be just right. It had to feel real. He played some chords absentmindedly until he found a melody he liked. When the pen finally hit the page, he knew Aline would be his. A few days later, Sergio asked the 13-year-old to come by his office. He wanted her to be the first one to hear a new song he'd just written. The honor wasn't lost on Aline, and she felt the blood rush to her cheeks as she sat next to him at the piano. The music flowed from Sergio's hands with grace and sincerity. The lyrics described a lover too frightened to make the first move. Alina knew it was about her. As he finished his performance, she showered him with praise. He knew he had her exactly where he wanted. Faking self-pity, he told her that he'd been hurt in the past and confessed that the song was about her. Then, without another word, he kissed her. Before the girl had a chance to say anything, he abruptly pulled away and sent her home. Confused and flustered, Alina spent days struggling with her emotions. With Gloria's help, Sergio had gotten his twisted hooks in Alina's head. Not only had he tricked her into believing she loved him, he had made it seem like he was the vulnerable one. Worse still, Alina truly believed Gloria had her best interests at heart. In reality, she'd led the girl straight to her abuser. Over the next 2 weeks, Sergio repeatedly asked Alina if she loved him. Though she insisted she did, he wanted her to show it and coerced her into sex. After months of manipulation, Sergio Andrade finally got what he wanted. Along with Gloria and Mary, Alina was now fully indoctrinated into his inner circle. Emboldened by his latest conquest, he felt unstoppable. Those three victims were just the beginning. Thanks again for tuning into Crimes of Passion. We'll be back Wednesday with part two of Sergio Andrade and Gloria Trevi's story. We'll discuss the duo's continued exploitation of underage girls and the courageous victim who finally exposed the truth. For more information on Trevi and Andrade, amongst the many sources we used, we found Girl Trouble by Christopher McDougall to be helpful to our research. You can find more episodes of Crimes of Passion and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time when true love meets true crime. Crimes of Passion is a Spotify original from Parcast. It is executive produced by Max Cutler. Sound design by Trent Williamson, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Bruce Katovich. This episode of Crimes of Passion was written by Grayson Niles, with writing assistance by Terrell Wells, fact-checking by Anya Bayerly, and research by Anna Paula Shelley, Mickey Taylor, and Chelsea Wood. I'm Lainey Hobbs.
Hi, it's Carter from Parcast. Every Thursday on Conspiracy Theories CIA Edition, we're uncovering secrets hidden deep within the archives of the Central Intelligence Agency to bring you a special collection of episodes from shows across our network. Follow the new Spotify original from Parcast, Conspiracy Theories CIA Edition. Listen free only on Spotify.